And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll break down everything related to the Giants. We will recap the Pro Bowl, recap the Senior Bowl, and get to your phone calls as well at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. So the Pro Bowl last night went in favor of the AFC 20-13. The Giants had four representatives in the contest. Odell Beckham wound up leading all receivers in receiving yards, so he had a very productive game.
Indeed he did.
Was in rhythm with Kirk Cousins, specifically on that last drive. Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins, very quiet performances, and Dwayne Harris only had a few returns, not much production there. But overall, I thought it was a very good product, Paul, and I know a lot of people, it's easy to make fun of the Pro Bowl. There's no defense. There's no effort. It's not a great product. But you had no points in the first quarter. You had both teams combined for 9 sacks. They were 0-for-6 in the red zone. I thought the quality of defense showcased in this contest was at an all-time high.
It was. And after the first series or two, when it got to about midway through the first quarter, they started to hit.
Yeah.
Early in the game, it was kind of like tackling a birthday cake. Okay, and then, you know, food reference. I like to do that during the course of the show.
You never shy away from that.
And then Ezekiel Elliott got himself smashed and pounded on a fourth and goal inside the one, and it was like three or four guys gang tackled him to prevent him from scoring that touchdown. That to me was the first sign of real hitting in the game. And from that point forward, all of a sudden, guys started to tackle and hit more, and I was happy. You know, I was happy to see Elliott get crushed on the goal line because it was like, okay, now it's a football game. Up until that point, they were goofing around, you know. So I thought that that was important and it was significant because now it made it a game. And then, of course, for Beckham, first snap, because there were no kickoffs. First snap, what do? Boom. Flare out to the right sideline, Prescott to get Beckham involved immediately. I like how they did that. Immediately, 6-yard gain up the sideline. Okay, good. We know Odell's there. Odell's happy. All well and good.
Well, he had some opportunities in the red zone. Prescott threw behind him. It looked like there was a miscue in terms of the route. And then Drew Brees targeted him.
Which undoubtedly was on Prescott, by the way. Just no question.
Just for clarification purposes, yes. We're glad that we got that out.
Way behind him.
The other one was Drew Brees trying to get him in the back of the end zone.
Yes.
And he threw that so close to Stephon Gilmore.
Ball was undercut.
Yeah. So he was able to pick that off. But Beckham was heavily involved in this contest. And, you know, you mentioned the hard hits that progressively increased throughout the contest. I mean, there was a point where, I don't know if you saw this, Jimmy Graham felt that he was hit too hard by Lorenzo Alexander of the Bills, and they got a little bit chippy with one another.
I love the fact that it was AFC, NFC again. We discussed that last week, talked about it with John. To me, that does entice a little bit more of the competitive juices to flow. I just don't think it does when you're talking about all-star captains picking guys and you got guys on the same team on opposite sides. No, if you want any semblance of competition at all, you better separate them by conferences the way it used to be. Remember, in the old days, it was called the AFC-NFC Pro Bowl or the NFC-AFC Pro Bowl. I think that's what it was called. That was the official name of it. It was named by conferences because that's the way it's supposed to be played. Anyway, I thought the other thing that was kind of humorous and gave me a chuckle was early in the game when Jason Garrett threw the red flag for the replay.
Yes.
On the catch down the sideline. And he was right.
Yeah.
How cool was that?
Well, and then there was a fumble, too, that they challenged as well. DeMarco Murray clearly
was
stripped by Michael Bennett.
And there's no question he was.
So the coaching staffs, the players, they were treating this like a real competitive game, which was nice to see. And, you know, you mentioned that things early, you know, seemed a little bit out of whack. I think it was because Andy Reid was so invested in running these trick plays, which didn't necessarily work to perfection. I guess you need Dontari Poe to run trick plays for the Chiefs, referring to what they did late in the season against the Broncos when he threw a touchdown pass. But Landon Collins was involved in one of those trick plays.
I put a memo up on Twitter. Did you see it?
I did see the memo.
Memo
yes.
To Coach McAdoo. Do not run a fourth down fake punt with Landon Collins this season. Bad idea. Don't do it. Get it out of the playbook. Don't even think about giving Collins the ball because he does not run the ball like the old number 21 Tiki Barber does. He got 1 yard on a 4th and 5, and it was ugly.
Who would have guessed that Landon Collins' first career NFL carry would have come off a fake punt in the Pro Bowl? For those of you who had that in a pool, congratulations, because I don't think I would have drew that up.
May it never happen again.
Indeed. With that being said, for those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Whittle, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping some of the highlights from the Pro Bowl. Four Giants involved. Odell Beckham making his presence felt. Landon Collins running a trick play. And Janoris Jenkins, Dwayne Harris also had some reps. But what did you think of the game? We want to hear from you at 201-939-4513 if you had an opportunity to make time in your Sunday to watch the contest. We'll also go over any free agency questions, draft questions you may have, as well as we always do each and every weekday here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And we'll monitor your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. Last week got a lot of good questions on Twitter, so we hope that those questions continue to come in to continue the dialogue and so forth. Well, without further ado, let's open up the phone lines here, and we have Jason in Pennsylvania. Jason, what's happening?
How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Jason. How's things with you?
Pretty good. My long-time listener, this is my second time calling in.
Well, thanks so much for tuning in.
A lot of times I listen to the show and I hear, like, Giants fans saying, you know, we have to keep Pierre Paul and we have to keep him. And I just think, you know, as a Giants fan, he's going to be a lot of money and we have sort of other needs. I really think his magic number is going to be $14, $15 million. And I think a team out there who I think will sign him and offer him that kind of money, I think Tom Coughlin being in Jacksonville is probably where he's going to end up being. I think he's from Florida anyways.
Yes.
So my overall question is, do you think the chemistry that Hankins and Harrison has is something that's really hard, you know, to let go if you think you have to, you know, get rid of somebody? Do you think it's more Hankins or Pierre Paul? Considering when Pierre Paul got hurt, we still went 3-1. In that Eagles game, I think we definitely should have won. I mean, we held Dallas to 7 points. We held Detroit to 6. We held, you know, Washington to 7. And in that playoff game, it was Cromartie's injury that kind of, I felt, you know, really made us go downhill. So should the Giants use the money they would invest on him, you know, maybe get another top corner and then maybe a linebacker, considering that we can, you know, we've shown that we can win without him, and maybe second, third round pick on a D lineman.
Well, the draft, you're going to have opportunities to bolster the roster through the draft, regardless of what happens in free agency. And Paul, you and I had alluded to some of these discussions specifically last week, and, you know, Jason is pretty much building off of some of those questions. I think you have to look at it from two perspectives. You have to look at it from the perspective of, can you afford to potentially have two defensive ends on this team that are making that $15, $14, $16 million ballpark figure per year, especially with the deal that they gave Olivier Vernon? And then on the flip side, and I think Jason was alluding to this, you have to look at it from the perspective, if you had to choose between the two, where do you think you have more depth? Do you have more depth at the defensive tackle position, or do you have more depth at the defensive end position? And I think from our conversations, we agreed that as it stands right now, and things are based on changing according to what happens in free agency, is that I think that they have more depth right now at defensive end, or more proven commodities, I should say.
You and I agreed on that, and in fact, a gentleman who follows me on Twitter all the time, a pretty good Giants fan, was countering us and was trying to make the argument to me, like, how could you possibly say an edge rusher and a dangerous guy like JPP would be easier to lose than Jonathan Hankins? And I had to try to explain to him, it's not about putting Hankins' value up against JPP. It's about the drop-off of the guys behind them, which we tried to explain during the course of the program. You know, you have to look at who the replacements are. I hate to say this because I'm not the biggest analytics guy, but especially in baseball, they have that thing called replacement value. I think Bill James, if I'm not mistaken,
it's part of that sabermetrics type
yes.
of philosophy.
And I don't quantify it in terms of numbers. I just simply quantify it in terms of the eye test. And in terms of the eye test, the replacement value of the backups at defensive end is certainly better on the Giants' current roster than they are at defensive tackle, which is what we tried to explain and why we said the Giants would probably be less pained to lose JPP than they would Hankins. Did I get that right? We both agree?
Absolutely. No, I'm on the same page as you. And one of the things that we brought up was the fact that, and the caller also touched on this, the fact that they were without JPP for a stretch, and they still played very good defense and held teams below 10 points, a number of high, prolific offenses. And the second factor is, if you just look at what some of the other defensive ends did this season, specifically Romeo Okwara, who flashed in that game that JPP missed against the Dallas Cowboys at MetLife Stadium. That was one guy that I think has a lot of potential, a lot of upside. Kerry Wynn's been on the team for the last few seasons, you know, and he's shown that he can at least provide somewhat of a boost in the pass rush department based on how he's utilized. I thought Devon Kennard was moved around a lot this season, where they brought him down on the defensive line. That's somebody that Spags can continue to move around. So you have a few more pieces and, you know, players that I think showed some versatility compared to at the defensive tackle spot. They have some bodies like Robert Thomas, like Jay Bromley. I just don't think at this point we've seen enough on the field, Paul, compared to what we've seen from some of these other defensive ends and other hybrid type of players that at least serve as pass rushers.
I would agree with you. Now, in terms of the numbers, the Eagles are the only team in the NFL that the top 15 highest paid 4-3 defensive ends at the position, they've got three of them. Okay.
So they have what, Vinnie Curry and Fletcher Cox, I'm sure, probably taking up some money.
No, it's Graham, Barwin, and Curry. Cox is a defensive tackle.
Cox, I'm sorry. Okay, yes, you're right. So you were talking about defensive ends.
Defensive ends exclusively. All three of their rotation defensive ends are in the top 15 highest paid guys by average yearly salary at the position. The Giants, with Vernon and JPP this past season, had two of the top four. Vernon was one, JPP was two. Now, the Eagles have three of the top 15. Their total salaries combined last year, about $27, $28 million, actually about $25 million. The Giants with Vernon and JPP was at about $27 million. So they were paying two guys what the Eagles were doing to pay three in the top 15. So if they could keep the number somewhere in that vicinity, you could make an argument that it's what it was this year, and they could make it happen realistically. The problem is, what happens when some other team opens the vault and overpays or over-offers JPP the kind of money potentially that Vernon got? I don't know how you make that happen if you're the Giants. I just don't.
Yeah.
Well, that's why the draft is so important, and finding younger guys so that if you do lose free agents, you know that you have some of these players on rookie contracts. It's the same thing with the quarterback situation. When you have a rookie quarterback, that cap hit is not very high. For example, you brought up the Eagles. Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott, it's not a massive cap hit right now for both of those teams. So you have the luxury to keep players at higher value at other positions.
No question.
When you have to start paying the quarterback, like the Giants do with Eli Manning, then sometimes it's a little bit more challenging to maintain the JPPs, the Olivier Vernons, the Janoris Jenkins, and all these other guys who demand big market money.
You know what's funny, too? We talk about Tom Brady. And one of the things that he does to help the Patriots is off the field.
Hello.
It's not just on the field, you know, because.
Hello.
Yeah, Jason.
Did we lose him?
No, he's still there.
Jason, one of the other things.
I didn't know whether or not I was still on.
No, we're with you. We're just giving you a very lengthy explanation.
Exactly.
If you want to go, we'll let you go. If you want to make another point, I'll hold off on my other one.
No. Yeah, my point, I just feel like, you know, our secondary is what really gave our D-line the opportunity, you know, to get after the quarterback. And, you know, maybe investing in someone who can come in and, you know, if Cromartie's or Jenkins gets hurt, you know, what do we have? You know, I think we should build upon the success of what our secondary did. And, you know, a lot of callers call in and they say, well, you know, offensive line, you know, the amount of money Pierre Paul is going to take, you know, you can really add, you know, a good tight end or another running back. And also, I would like to see us carry over some money into next year because we do have future contracts ourselves, like Pugh and Rich Berg, and then we have Collins. And so I don't like to see us go broke this year. And I think, you know, fans need to understand that we can do okay without Pierre Paul as long as we just, in my opinion, help build on the secondary, which – got us, in my opinion, to 11 wins.
Well, DRC is still under contract. You have Eli Apple that you just drafted. Janoris Jenkins, you just signed to a contract. So you have three corners, at least, that you can rely on as your starters. I would agree with you, Jason. I think they'll probably look at what the depth chart beyond that is. Trevin Wade is a restricted free agent. You have Leon Hall, who you brought in, who I thought proved to be extremely valuable based on the fact that he can play safety and cornerback. So maybe if he wants to continue his career, you consider bringing him back. There are some options there that they can at least look at, but also the draft is pretty deep at cornerback this year, and that's another position that they can look to maybe bring in another young guy. And
I definitely agree with you guys. Definitely agree with you. And, you know, as a Giants fan, you know, we let good players go. And I'm thinking about, you know, the future. What's the future going to be like? It's always, you know, one season at a time. But we do have contracts that we got to worry about. And I think, you know, life without Pierre Paul, it's going to be okay. He's a great player. I respect him. I love what he did for the Giants. But I think moving forward, I think there's just other, you know, key positions we can fill with the amount of money I think he's going to take. And thank you, guys, and I'll take your comments off the air.
All right, Jason, appreciate the phone call.
The other point I was going to make, which involved the cap number, when he's talking about how much money can you give JPP, and Lance was bringing up the quarterback scenario, which we also talked about last week, Tom Brady's cap hit is only about $14 million, you know, because he is willing to work his numbers to the degree that the Patriots can go out and surround him with better players by helping out the cap. Look, I'm not saying that, you know, Tom Brady is a saint for doing that, because God knows he's married to a model who's making millions and millions and millions and millions too. So certainly he's in a better position to do that, but it does help when your quarterback is not taking this massive, humongous, King Kong-sized cap number. It absolutely helps.
Well, it also helps considering they're going to have to make a decision about Jimmy Garoppolo, too, with his rookie contract coming up. And I know that they drafted another young quarterback that they have on the roster, but it's hard to keep everybody in the NFL. When you have so much depth, you're going to lose players. I remember a few years ago, you know, everybody was talking about, Paul, if you recall, the Seattle Seahawks. And Seattle, John Schneider, their general manager, he brought in a number of young guys, late-round picks, undrafted free agents, and all of these guys were extremely productive, including Richard Sherman. What happens? Now, all of a sudden, their contracts come up at the same time, and you have to make some sacrifices. You can't necessarily keep everybody. You also have to give Russell Wilson a new deal. You have to give Earl Thomas. You have to give, you know, some of your prolific linebackers. And they lost guys like Brandon Browner and Byron Maxwell, and it hasn't killed them. They've still maintained continuity on defense, but I don't think the Giants are in a unique position. That's my point. Every team has the challenge where contracts come up and they have to determine, do we have enough substance in the draft? Do we have enough substance on the back end of the depth chart? Or do we have to invest in this player? And that's something now the Giants are going to have to tackle this offseason.
It's a cyclical situation which, quite frankly, hurts teams that become Super Bowl contenders, because the system tries to break you down. And the selfishness, if I may, of winning players and winning teams tends to eat away at your cap number and then destroys the structure of what you tried to build, which is why the Patriots model is so incredibly unique, because they all buy into the team concept all the time and allow the team to reload. It's incredible how unselfish the players are in that organization, year after year after year after year. I just don't understand how they make it happen, but they do. And that is the primary reason that they're able to be so good. Yes, terrific players, franchise players, core players, great head coach, great coaching staff. I get all of that. But from a practical perspective, when you can make your numbers work for you and not allow the cap to suffocate you, which is what they all do up there, it makes life so much easier.
Well, I also think it speaks volumes of finding players in the draft, undrafted players, which don't put a burden on your cap.
It does.
That helps. And also, if you've looked at some of the decisions the Patriots have made in the past, you know, they're of the belief that they have a number and they're not willing to necessarily go higher than that number. And they feel, we believe in our system, we believe in the draft, and we'll just groom another guy as opposed to bringing back a proven veteran, let's say.
Let me just use this as an example. I'm telling you right now, if this were the Patriots and JPP was an unrestricted free agent, he'd be gone.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because of their philosophy.
There would not even be a question about JPP coming back if this were the Patriots. He would be gone. Case closed. You wouldn't even be talking about that wild card team that's got a boatload of money to give him. He'd be gone.
Well, and another one that I'll give you as an example, I'll use a Patriots example. Remember when they traded Logan Mankins, one of their best offensive linemen, to Tampa Bay?
In the last 10 years, they have gotten rid of a bunch of guys who were either coming off a Pro Bowl season or 1 year removed because they were making, quote, too much money in Bill's structure.
Richard Seymour is another one.
Absolutely.
Went to the Raiders. So, I mean, that's been well documented. But every team has a different philosophy. That doesn't mean that the Giants follow that philosophy. That doesn't mean that they have to follow that philosophy. It's just that's New England's blueprint. And it's worked for them, and that's why they're off to their seventh Super Bowl in the last 16
seasons.
And,
by the way, they lost two Super Bowls to the Giants.
Yes, they
just
did.
Saying.
Correct. Absolutely. Of Tom Brady's seven appearances. Well, we don't know the result of this next one yet, but the two blemishes are
4-2
at the hands of the New
Four
York Giants.
4-2 Yes. Two. Just saying.
You had to make sure the hands emphasized what you had to say. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to some of your tweets here in a moment, but we want to get to a few more phone calls. Lewis is in North Carolina. Lewis, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Hi.
How's things with you?
I'm pretty good. I'm glad to be here with you guys now. I've been following the Giants for a while.
Cool.
I'm a younger fan, so I have a couple things I want to discuss with y'all today. The first thing I want to talk about is Ereck Flowers. Now, I've been listening to you guys for a while now, and I hear everybody talk about how bad Ereck Flowers has been. I feel that Ereck Flowers is an excellent tackle in the fact that he has grit. You know, I feel like he has to work on his technique, but I think that will come with time. And if you think about it, since we drafted him, most of the pressure has been on him to perform at the highest level. I don't think he had time to learn behind some of the veterans. He was basically the leader in our offensive line group, especially with a lot of the injuries we had. One of the main points I also want to make about Ereck Flowers is that I don't think he should go to right tackle. I think that we can keep him at left tackle, improve those technique issues, and I think he'll be a suitable left tackle for us. The next thing I want to go into is about JPP. Now, I agree with you, Paul. I agree that I feel like we shouldn't keep JPP. He's way too much money, way too much money, and I feel like we have guys on our roster currently that can actually fill in, maybe not produce at the level that he produced. I think he had, what, about 8 sacks this season?
Yeah, but here's what – please don't misunderstand. I'd like to keep him, but I don't
–
but I don't
I
think –
I would like to keep him too.
I don't think you can give him Fort Knox, and I also don't think that it's a death blow if they lose him.
Exactly, and I feel like for the number – what people are saying he's wanting, I feel like he's not worth that number, especially with the hand and the injuries. And what got me most about JPP as a fan, watching the games and everything, I noticed that right when we needed him, right when we were entering that playoff surge, he wasn't there. He was hurt. You know what I mean? And part of getting that money, I think, that he wanted was the availability. And he got hurt again, so I feel like we should part ways from him. He's a good guy, good player, but I feel like for that amount of money, it's not worth it. Now, I wanted to kind of move to the draft. I was thinking, now I know we drafted David Wilson a few years back, and I was thinking that maybe we should take a running back first round. I know Rashad Jennings, he isn't the answer. Paul Perkins, he's a good young back, but I feel like he's not going to be able to solve our problems. I feel like we've been underperforming in the running game significantly since we had Amar Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs. And I think that it's time for either a young back or a veteran to get back there and handle the primary duties of running back. So I just want to hear what y'all had to say about that.
Well, it's something actually we've talked about in weeks prior. I know Paul brought up maybe Eddie Lacy, who's going to be a free agent, to get back to that bigger back to complement what Paul Perkins brings to the table. I slightly disagree with your take, Lewis, in terms of that Perkins – can't necessarily carry the load. If you look at what he averaged in college, he averaged just under 20 carries. And if you see when they got him into a role where he was the lead back, the running game actually drastically improved down the stretch of the season where they were running for over 100 yards. So I don't really think durability and workload is a concern for Perkins. I do agree with you that I don't think it hurts to get that goal line type of running back, maybe in short yardage situations, somebody that is of a different build from Perkins to maybe help complement him. I don't think that's an issue at all, but I do think that Perkins can be a guy that can get anywhere from 15 to 17 carries a game moving forward, and I don't think that's necessarily going to wear him down.
Yeah, and I was looking at a lot of his stats, and what got me is that I understand about the 15 to 17 carries per game, but I'm talking about his average. How many yards is he going to get per game? Now, towards the end of the season, he came on a little bit, but, you know, I'm looking for a guy who I feel like consistently can get us 100 yards per game. You know what I mean? Like, somewhere in that range. And I think that will answer a lot of our questions as far as not only the offensive line, but also just our production as an offense. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if we had a running back we could count on that could tote the rock about 20 to 25 times per game with good production, I think that'll make a huge difference for us. But with that being said, I feel like we should target somebody in the first round, running back-wise, because unless we go get somebody in the free agency,
agency, and also keep in mind, Paul Perkins was a late-round pick. And I think that number of running backs that have been drafted in late rounds that have become starters. So, I mean, personally, this is just my opinion. I'm not a big fan of going for a running back in the first round because I think there's depth at that position and the injury rate is so high at that position since they take the brunt of the hits in the NFL that I think you can get somebody in the fourth round to the fifth round who could be a productive back. For example, Alfred Morris, who started for the Redskins before he went to Dallas, he was a late-round pick too, and he had a tremendous rookie campaign and then some even after that. So you can find, I think, a proven commodity. And Perkins wound up averaging over 4 yards per carry this season, and he had a number of games where he actually was better than 5 yards per carry. It fluctuated, like you alluded to, Lewis, but I think that, you know, he had overall, based on his limited carries, he only had 112 carries this season. And to get over 4 yards per carry over a small sample size, I mean, that to me is a step in the right direction.
What if I said to you...
Can I ask just one question? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's right.
What's this last question about a statistic? How many touchdowns did he score?
Paul Perkins did not have a touchdown this season.
That's kind of what I'm leaning to. You know what I mean? Like, just the production overall, not just one statistical area. But go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's all right. Samaje Perine from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
5'11", 235 pounds, bull,
okay,
workhorse, powerful, small, low to the ground back, probably a third or fourth rounder. I think you get him at the beginning of the third day. Maybe you got to take him at the end of the third round. What if I said to you, we're talking about an Eddie Lacy kind of guy. That's the kind of guy I'm talking about. He's not going to go high because most teams want, if they're going to draft a running back, they want a guy who's going to be much more versatile, much more of a passing threat. They're going to want a guy who's much more explosive, who's much more shifty. Everybody wants speed. The Giants, in my opinion, need a thunder back to complement Perkins, who to me is more of the athletic, quicker back.
Yeah,
I think go back and look at your Oklahoma film from this year. Go back on YouTube and see if you can take a look at this guy.
I will.
In my mind, Perine is an outstanding – I think that's the way he pronounces it. And if I'm getting it wrong, I'm sorry because I haven't listened to announcers talk about him. I've only seen some video on him. I think if you're going to look at the draft and not go free agency because you want somebody who's younger and maybe has less wear on his tires – take a look at this Oklahoma back, because I think he's exactly the kind of guy who would be the complement to Perkins, who I think they could get in the third or fourth round. I think he'd be a great back. He put up huge numbers at Oklahoma as a power guy. That's what I want. Power run game, baby.
Exactly. I miss Brandon Jacobs, man. I was a huge fan of Brandon Jacobs. I love what he brought to the game. But my last point I'm going to leave with y'all, I was looking at some of the available free agents, and, you know, Riley Reiff was one who stand out to me.
From the Lions.
One who really stood out to me was Alshon Jeffrey. Now, I know we have a lot of problems with having a pure outside receiver.
Don't even think about it. Don't even think about it. You know why? He's going to command huge bucks, and you're better off going after a guy like Kupp in the draft, who, again, could be a third-round pick. Well, How about this? The gentleman from the Raiders, who's the 6'4" receiver, free agent from the Raiders.
Free agent.
Oh, my goodness. You know who I'm talking about.
You talk about their
third
strong receiver?
Yes.
I didn't look at who's a free agent on the Raiders. You're talking about Seth Roberts?
No. Oh my goodness. I'm throwing a blank here.
Well, I have their wide receivers up, so who are you referring to?
Wide receiver, it would be Andre Holmes.
Andre Holmes, okay.
Andre Holmes.
6'4", 210.
6'4", 210. And you know what? A few years ago, when he was forced to play a lot, he had over 40 catches, averaged nearly 15 yards a catch. He's 6'4", he's 28 years old, he's not going to command a lot of money, he's not a one or a two, he's more like a three or a four. If you're going to go free agency, he'd be my top target.
Yeah, I think you could get some better value for a cheaper price in free agency than necessarily going after Alshon Jeffrey. And the other thing with Jeffrey is there's some durability questions. Remember, he's missed some time because of injuries as well.
And he's a one or a two. You don't need a one or a two here.
Yeah, I agree with those points. I was just thinking from the perspective that since he was, per se, injury prone, I thought he would.
He's going to want to get paid, man.
Not just based off his name.
He's going to want to get paid. You can't do. You're not going to get him for anything near reasonable.
I don't think the agent is necessarily going to go to every team, Lewis, and say, you know what, we'll give you a discount because Jeffrey missed a few games this past season. That's not necessarily how the business works.
But with that being said, I also feel like, you know, us getting a player who is average at best is really isn't our answer, especially when we like to pass the ball, and that's our primary use in our offense. And I noticed a lot of people also – I'm going to leave y'all with one more point. I'm sorry. I really enjoy the Giants. But the last point I want to make is that I noticed that people were saying on the show that, you know, we need to change the scheme about us running the ball. And I think we have a good scheme. I mean, we have a lot of different runs out of that system, out of that pistol type, shotgun type of offense. But I also feel like the addition of Will Johnson, once he comes back, and it was another fullback that the Giants had. I can't think of his name right now, but I thought he was a really good guy.
You're talking about Nikita Whitlock. Nikita Whitlock.
Whitlock. I miss Whitlock, man. I think he was a great player, and he played both sides of the ball. So I think once those guys come back, I think, you know, things will really improve. But I'm really on my lunch break right now, guys.
All right, Lewis.
I thank y'all for taking my call, and I'll definitely be calling back.
You got it.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
I don't think you're going to see Nikita Whitlock back. I think that Will Johnson will be the part-time fullback when necessary.
And tight end, perhaps, if they want to run him out.
Definitely the tight end, but part-time fullback. And if they find it suitable to go out and get another fullback, they will. But I don't think Whitlock is coming back.
Yeah, Will Johnson, who was expected to play a pretty big role, unfortunately suffered the neck injury in the preseason, and he had to be placed on IR because the Giants had some roster decisions to make. But, you know, he's expected to return, and that's somebody that I think could provide a boost, and you don't have to worry about going out in free agency to get him or the draft because he's already obviously on the roster. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you, 201-939-4513. We've been recapping the Pro Bowl, talking about free agency, draft focus, and so forth. We've got Chris in New York. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
So hi.
Nice speaking to you guys. Love your show.
Appreciate
it.
Thanks for tuning in.
I just got one statement and then one quick question, and I'll just take it off the air after that. Statement, Paul, I'll tell you right now, you're not going to like it, but it's about, you know, basically just salary cap and the draft. And I'll preface it with saying, there's a reason I'm not a general manager. This is, if I was, I'd be fired immediately. But if it were me, I feel like I'd want to sign JPP again. I'd want to sign Haakins again. I'd go out and get Andrew Whitworth. I'd go out and re-sign Keenan Robinson. I'd get Brian Quick or Andre Holmes or something. I'd essentially blow up the cap and ruin it for the next 5 years. The only reason I say that is because Eli Manning has a finite amount of time left.
Agreed.
And in the NFL, you're not guaranteed to just, whoops, here's another franchise quarterback for another 15 years. That doesn't happen. I mean, look at the Browns. The Raiders just got Derek Carr after years of struggling. So I feel like you have to make the most out of Eli Manning's time left, even if it does sacrifice the couple years after he's gone with, you know, ruined cap, so to speak.
Well,
what do you guys think?
I wanted to just jump in quickly, Chris. My only counter to that is, and I completely understand where you're coming from, is, you know, you have to think about Odell Beckham's going to eventually need a new contract. Justin Pugh's going to need a new contract. No, but this is part of Eli Manning's window is what I'm talking about.
It is, but don't worry about Beckham's deal because he's got 2017 on his deal, team option for 18. They could always franchise him for 19 and 20. To be honest, Odell Beckham is under the Giants' thumb for four more seasons if they really want him to be.
Well, but Pugh doesn't have that much flexibility.
No, but, you know, Beckham's hands are tied.
I'm just saying that there are other players, though, that are going to be coming up within, to me, the Eli Manning window that if you go with Chris's preface about blowing up the cap, you're still then going to run into trouble within the Eli Manning window is my point.
See, the problem with the NFL cap, too, is that it's a hard cap.
Yeah,
it's not
no
like you pay a luxury cap in baseball or in the NBA.
Where you could go above the number.
You know, you can't do that.
And
there are no bird rights and there's no luxury tax. It's a hard cap. You want to blow it up, that's great, but there's only so much money because it's a finite number.
Right. Okay. I got
that's
you.
All.
And then,
and I'm not angry with you, and I don't disagree with you. I think it's great if they can do something in the next 2 years because Eli doesn't have much more time. I actually am on board with you.
Hey, I'm just brainstorming here. I know Jerry Reese wouldn't do that. I don't think you'd put all the marbles in that basket. But my last question, I'll leave you off the air with this. If you were to move Eric Flowers to right tackle, as some have, you know, predicted that might happen, I know you guys have said there's a lot of good edge rushers on that side now, Ryan Kerrigan, you know, Von Miller, Justin Houston. But I feel like it'd still be advantageous because, you know, if Eric Flowers is getting blown up on the right side, Eli would still be able to see it as opposed to, you know, not being aware of what's going on behind him. What do you guys think about that? And I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I mean, we have both said that Eric Flowers has to get better no matter where he plays. I don't care if he stays on the left side or the right side. He's got to play better. He must continue to progress. He can't stay the same. You know, at times this year, he continued to look like a rookie. And that's not going to get it done.
There's no such thing. I think we've got to get past this narrative, and it's not just Giants fans. It's football fans in general. There is no such thing as hiding an offensive lineman.
They'll find you.
So whether we sit here and we talk about you move to guard, you move to tackle, I mean, yes, the technique changes a little bit if you change complete position.
Responsibilities do change.
But they're still now on defense going to move personnel around so much, as we've seen. You know, defensive ends who are premier defensive ends don't always stay on one side. I mean, even Vernon and JPP switched.
At times.
Now, part of that was because of the wrist injury and so forth. But still, Spags moves personnel around, too. Other defensive coordinators do the same thing. You can't hide a guy, and you can't say, well, we move him on to the right now, he's not going to see as much challenges and so forth. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Lance. I think the ultimate place for Flowers, the ultimate landing spot, is going to once again be determined by who else the Giants have on the team.
Other options.
If they don't upgrade the left tackle spot with somebody else, he's got to go back there. Now, I agree with you. He's got to play better. But, folks, understand this. For every single person out there who wants to move him to right tackle, if he's the best option at left, that's where he's going to stay.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. We got Vito in New York. Vito, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Vito. How's everything with you? What do you got?
Terrific. Paul, you were mentioning that the New England Patriots are 4-2, and the two losses came against the Giants. Why did they have the two losses against the Giants? Because of the great defensive line. And if you get rid of JPP, you wouldn't beat the Patriots. They would be 5-1. If you didn't have OC and Tuck, they might have been on a 6-0 streak right now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I'm with you 100%. The Giants' defensive line, huge in both of those Super Bowls, without question. No one is going to dispute that at all. But when you look at the help that the Giants need on the offensive side of the ball, you have to wonder how many funds are available and how many funds do you have to devote to the offense before you start worrying about maybe breaking the bank to re-sign Jason. When you've got Harrison, You've got Vernon. You've got maybe Hankins coming back. It's not like you got chopped liver on that defensive line if JPP were to walk. You got some pretty good players on that line, even without him.
Well, and Vito, I would agree with your sentiment, and I agree with what Paul threw out, and I'm counting the numbers here. Giants had 35 sacks this season. 14 different players had at least half a sack this season. Spags utilized the secondary probably more so than we've seen in the last few seasons.
Well, he could because there were so many good guys back there.
He had flexibility. Now, JPP, when you look at his numbers this season, he had 7 sacks.
Right.
So the rest of the team accounted for 28 of those sacks. That was 13 different players. Now, that's still a big void to fill if we go down the hypothetical road, but I think you saw there was some versatility on this roster in the usage of the secondary where I think you may not be able to completely make up for those 7 sacks, but you have enough there that I think you can move personnel around and still be productive with your pass rush.
Yeah. Well, if Reese didn't draft Bromley in the 3rd round, you know, you might be able to get rid of Hankins this year. But because he drafted a 5th-round projected guy as a 3rd-rounder, that hurt.
Well, see, where it really hurts the Giants right now is that they have not seen enough production out of Jay Bromley to believe that he could be the heir apparent to Hankins. You're absolutely right there. We also haven't seen enough production in the first 2 years out of 00 to know that he could be the heir apparent to Jason. And certainly, Okwara, you know, flashed as a rookie, but it would be unrealistic.
Small sample
to
size.
Expect that,
yeah,
he would be the heir apparent at defensive end. But I think we know that Kerry Wynn is not the heir apparent to Jason as a pass rusher. We would like to have believed that 00 could have done it, but we just haven't seen enough. And that's all unfortunate because, look, if those guys, the Bromleys, the 00s, the Wins, you know, all of those guys had shown more in their initial NFL seasons, it'd be a lot easier for us to sit here and say, allow Jason Pierre-Paul to walk. You wouldn't be calling up right now expressing concern, you know, but because that production has not been there, you're having a lot of sleepless nights worried about JPP going elsewhere, right?
That's right. The Giants had 2 top 10 draft picks, and even Eli Apple I don't think is that good. Did you see how
I think you're wrong about that. I think he's very good.
Hail Mary was his fault, and I think 4 of the touchdowns were his fault.
No. No,
well,
you're wrong. You're wrong.
Number 24. I saw his number all the time.
I think I had Apple giving up 2, maybe 3 touchdown passes this year. I'd have to go back into my files. 2, maybe 3. The percentage of completions against him was actually very solid, and he's a terrific run support cornerback. And he was only a rookie. He will continue to get better. His upside is big time.
Yeah,
I think you're totally wrong on him.
I mean, I think it's a little too early to jump to conclusions.
In the Green Bay game.
The Green Bay game, there was a touchdown that was given up in the playoffs where he did a switch. Him and Trevin Wade did a switch, and because of the switch, which was not executed properly, he wound up being the DB in the end zone on the touchdown. But that was more on what happened, what the quality of the route. It was more on the bad quality of the switch. And then it was also, of course, on the throw made by Aaron Rodgers. No, that was not a coverage problem by him. You're mistaken on that.
And the Hail Mary was his fault.
Hail Mary was not his fault.
Hail
Mary was not his fault because ultimately in a Hail Mary, it's the safety who's the last line of defense. And in talking to Landon Collins, he misjudged the pass and he misjudged where they were on the field. So that was also not his fault. So you're 0 for 2. You care to throw another one out there? All right, have a good day.
All right, Vito. All right. Appreciate the phone call. One of the things that I wanted to bring up about finding potential replacements, I'm looking back and, you know, Linval Joseph, who ultimately replaced Barry Cofield, if you go back, Paul, and you look at his 2010 rookie campaign, very quiet. He only played 6 games that season. So I'm just trying to build a parallel here. That doesn't mean that you feel that much more comfortable that you're going to repeat what Linval Joseph did, but you didn't really have much to go by. My point is with Linval, and Barry Cofield left, and Linval stepped into a bigger role and became productive.
You know, it's very, 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 very hard for any fan or even a coaching staff to watch a proven player walk out the door. It's hard to do. You get used to the player. You build a comfort zone with the player. You'd like to believe the player even has some more upside. And so you want to hold on to him in the worst way. But, because of the way the structure works with the cap, you can't always do it. So now you've got to make that decision about, okay, can we go out and get somebody else who's going to do the job, or do we have somebody in-house who we can project to do that job? Now, I will tell you, I remember very well when Cornelius Griffin left. I remember very well when Linval Joseph left. Both times, everybody agreed these are quality players, and they're probably going to be better when they leave. But the numbers were astronomical.
Especially for a guy like Linval Joseph, the amount of money that he wound up taking.
The money that Griffin got, the money that Cofield got, the money that Linval Joseph got. Three successive defensive tackles. Proved something to the Giants, and then got boatloads of money to walk. In all three cases, the Giants were fiscally responsible by not chasing him up the ladder. And you know what? They were probably right in all three cases, even though all of those players went on to have productive seasons elsewhere. It's not that those guys bombed. They all did well. But the Giants were not in a position to break the bank for any of them. You know what? That's a win-win then, because the Giants didn't hurt themselves on the cap, and the players went on and produced for other teams. That's the way it happens sometimes.
I'd go on offense. I'd throw Martellus Bennett into that conversation as well. I think it's relevant with what happened there because it was a similar circumstance. Productive guy, a lot of money he got. Had to make a decision. Did you want to break open the bank and so forth? So he's also relevant.
You can't break your piggy bank, okay? You can't do it over one player or one guy who is not truly a super duper star who's going to be a huge difference maker. You know, you could argue every team maybe has that one guy they kind of have to crack the bank for, maybe, but just not another good player. You can't do it.
Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tony's in Chelsea. Tony, what's happening?
Hey guys, Vito stole a lot of my thunder. I feel that JPP is needed. I feel you also don't have to break the bank on him. That's what the franchise tag is for. I don't think JPP is in a position where he needs to sit out a year just to say, I won't accept this. Again, when we were successful, we had three pass rushes in 2007-2011. Right now, we only have two. If no JPP, we're only going to have one true pass rusher. I can't see how we can let him go. And also on Hankins, I feel Hankins is very good, but I don't feel he's on the level that JPP is at. So if we had to pick between one of the two, I'm going with JPP.
Well, again, I need to ask you, what do you think about the creativity of getting a guy like Kennard involved in the pass rush? What do you think about the potential of Aquara and the potential of 00? And, you know, can the Giants manufacture pass rush from somewhere else? And don't forget, there's still the draft coming up. And there are a bunch of guys in this draft who supposedly can play defensive end in the 4-3 system and are going to be draftable players.
Paul, we saw what Aquara was after the Dallas game. I think even you made a point, now that there's film on him, things are going to be different. I feel that Aquara...
No question. How will he adjust? Remember now, he came in as an undrafted rookie free agent, so he had quite a bit to carry or to climb to even get to what he did.
Right, but do you disagree that the franchise tag could affect things to lower down the price for JPP?
I don't think it says they're going to lower the price, and he also
needs... saying, in other words, you give him off instead of giving him an $18 to $19 million contract, which is what he wants. Can you offer him $15
well,
and use the franchise tag? Give him a fair offer, and if not, he has to sit out a year.
The problem is now he's already said he's not going to sign it.
He's come out publicly. Now, part of that is the negotiation process too, but with the franchise tag. Though it's not a negotiation, it's a set number based on the averages that play out for that position. So there's not really much wiggle room where you could go, well, you know, we'll give you the franchise tag at this number, and then you come back and tell us where you want it at.
And there is one sticky caveat attached to what you're suggesting. I mean, you think it's just that simple to do that and make him dangle and make him wait, and then he's going to have to sign it. Well, there's a sticky caveat, and that is, if you tag a player with a franchise tag, that money comes off your cap, even if the player hasn't signed. that tag number applies to your cap.
There's a hold there, so you can't go out and spend that money.
It's kind of like an escrow.
Correct, exactly.
So now you've hurt yourself in terms of trying to do deals with free agents because that money's tied up under your cap. That's not good.
You're right, but I feel that this is the money we offer him anyway. And, again, you know with cuts and all that stuff, we're going to be, I guess it depends on what figures go by, but at least 30-plus million over the cap.
You'd like to hope so. You'd like to hope so. Again, those are all speculative numbers because you don't know which guys they're going to be able to redo and which guys they're going to be able to get rid of.
Right, but you really don't feel that JPP would have made a difference in that Green Bay Packers game when they dropped back seven and they were just rushing four?
Well,
other people were not able to beat their man. I felt JPP would have.
You know what? I'd like to believe that he would have helped out some, but the four drop passes, the two in the end zone, the horrible offensive line play on third and one. You know, there are a lot of reasons they lost that game. The stupid Hail Mary pass.
Special teams.
Special teams,
that has
field position.
To do with JPP. Okay.
JPP's not the difference maker in that game. There were a lot of things that went wrong.
Okay, just one more point about JPP. Fans are also bringing up the injuries. I think these fans are also forgetting that JPP and Vernon led the entire league at defensive end when it came to snaps. The guy's 28, 29. How about, you know, give him...
Not just defensive ends. They played, I believe, the two highest percentage of snaps of anybody on any defense.
Right. So, again, you can't say that wear and tear would not affect anybody,
until,
let alone JPP.
Yeah, until JPP suffered the groin injury and had to miss the last month of the season. Look, all I'm saying is this. Jason, at 28 years old, if you're going to have any pause or cause for concern about the kind of deal you're going to give him, you will have to take into account that he has had shoulder, knee, back, groin, hand.
Number of injuries, yes.
Bunch of injuries. He is not pristine, like open the box and he's brand new. That's not the case, okay? That's not the case.
I get you, but I'm just saying it's going to be a whole lot. You know how it is for defensive end. You almost have to wait a year for them to start producing.
Look, man.
Even though JPP had flashes, where we're picking up, I don't think, where we're drafting, we're not going to get another JPP.
Let me just say this to you. I am a big JPP fan, personally and professionally. I like the guy a lot. I got respect for him. I appreciate him. I would love to see him re-sign with the Giants, okay? Let me make that very, very clear. I would love to see it. I just don't know if the numbers make it fiscally responsible and possible. That's all I'm saying. And I'm prepared for the fact that somebody might give him a Brinks truck and force the Giants not to meet that number. That's all I'm saying. Please don't think that I don't want him here. That's not true.
I understand. I have some other points, but I don't want to take up all the time.
Yeah, Tony, we want to try to get to a few more calls and do appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
I can just go real quick on Eddie Lacy.
Real quick. Okay. What do you got?
I do not want Eddie Lacy. He's a notorious slow starter. He's had injury histories.
He does have injury history.
Leg last year. Why don't you just spend a fourth-round draft pick to get, you know, your quality of the back is supposed to be very big in this draft. Anyway, I'll take your comments off here. Thank you.
All right, Tony. Appreciate the phone call. Well, earlier in the program, I said that there's been starting running backs that have been found in the fourth and the fifth round. So
I'm telling you, Perrine out of Oklahoma, to me, go look at your YouTube video on him. Oh, boy, he's an Eddie Lacy kind of back.
I don't think it's a stretch to say the target could be getting another running back on the back end of the draft. I think that we've seen many examples across the NFL.
Especially power guys.
Of course, very, very doable. And just one other quick point that I just wanted to throw out about JPP. You know, the reason why you were bringing up the whole you can't anticipate the money and what other teams are going to do is because premier pass rushers very rarely get on the market to begin with, Paul.
It's true.
Teams, once they find them, they lock them up. They never let them go. So that's another reason why it's so unpredictable. We got Dre in Rochester. Dre, what's happening?
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Dre. Yeah. What do you got for us?
I'm sorry if I get a little emotional. I'm sorry about this because JPP is like one of my favorite Giants.
I understand.
Understandable.
And to see him go, it'll take some time to get over that. And I don't think we can lose him because of his locker room presence. Because of his on-the-field presence, he's not only a hard person to deal with on the field, he's a freaking monster. You're not going to find any other monsters out there like him. It takes a double team, And sometimes it takes three people to get him off the quarterback. But I don't know.
I'm with you, man. I'm a big fan. I just don't know how this is going to shake down. You know, there's only one way, if you want to get creative, that the Giants might be able to do something that's even in the ballpark of what somebody might do to try to overpay him, and that is when you talk about the guaranteed money. Because a lot of times, and again, I don't want to get into numbers because it's all speculation, and I have no idea what ultimately he's going to need or settle for or what the Giants will ultimately offer him. But what you can do, if you're at least somewhat in the neighborhood of somebody else's numbers without matching them, you guarantee more than the other team.
You bring that money up, correct.
Because everybody knows some of these numbers that you see in the paper that get reported are total value of the contract, and half of those numbers are hollow because they're either back-end numbers, which the guy will never see.
Or they get restructured. The deal.
Or they get restructured anyway, and he never meets those numbers, or they're all in incentives that are, like, impossible to reach. So if you come up with a lesser number than another team, but you offer more guaranteed money, that sometimes can get a player to take a lesser overall number than what somebody else gives you. So that would be a way, maybe, that he could be retained. But
just your personal opinion, Paulie, do you think he's worth OV's money?
I would think so if the Giants had infinite numbers of to offer him. But I think right now, when you talk about health, age, production, I think OV right now probably deserves to be a higher number than what JPP is.
But the one thing I will add to that, Dre, I think the one facet of JPP's game that doesn't get enough attention and
plays the run extremely well.
We'll see based on what
but
the market
so did OV
dictates.
This year.
No, I'm not comparing him to OV. I'm talking about other defensive ends that are out there. And if I'm a general manager, if I'm an executive, I'm saying if I invest in this guy, we can look at the sacks and the pass rush, but how is he going to help us improve our run defense? JPP is going to help you in that department,
sure
too.
Sure he will.
And that's something that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration when they evaluate some of the pass rush.
In answer to your question, I think because Vernon's got better health, okay, I would say that Olivier Vernon is a notch above JPP. How much? I'm going to leave that for somebody else to figure out the numbers. But I would agree that Vernon, as strictly in a football perspective, specifically because of his cleaner health situation, would probably be a higher value on most people's boards.
Durability has a value in the National Football League. You can't overlook that.
Is that fair for you?
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, Drake.
I just always thought he should have been captain a long time ago. I'll let you guys go.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Remember, the other challenge was the hand injury, threw a curveball in. So, you know, maybe some of the things that the Giants were thinking all of a sudden had to be reevaluated because of something that you just couldn't have predicted, and who knew that was going to happen. All right, let's head back.
Let's not forget, too, he's coming off of a groin surgery now.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know, this is just another thing he's had to deal with that he's going to have to come back from. I firmly believe he will come back. Look, I've seen this guy. Don't put a ceiling or never say no to JPP. He will be back, and he will play well. He really will. There's no question in my mind about that. But I also believe this is one of those deals where both guys make each other better. I do. I believe that. So it's not just losing JPP. If you lose him, I do think it does take a little bit away from OV's game on the flip side of that defensive
line. Because of what both of the guys do to complement one another. And JPP has been on the record saying, you know, he enjoys his time here. I mean, it's not as if he's looking to go elsewhere. But, you know, sometimes the money in the market can change philosophy.
And it works both ways. I think part of the reason that JPP was as good as he was this year is because OV was on the other side.
The talent around him. And also having Hankins and Harrison provide some pressure up the middle, too. Let's not forget about
guys,
those two guys.
Guys, it's a team game.
Yeah.
It's a team game. It's not about one guy.
Sometimes you've seen defensive ends go to other teams where they don't have nearly as much talent, and then people wonder, why does the production dip? Well, maybe it's because if he doesn't have nearly as much help.
Just remember this. OC had Michael, and Michael had OC, and they both had Tuck. Okay.
And Matthias Kiwanuka thrown in the mix as well.
There's a reason. There's a reason why the line is as good as it is.
All right, let's try to squeeze in one more caller. We got Richie on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I'll try to make this quick. I know you guys are short on time right now. But staying on the JPP subject, you know, I'm more than prepared to. I don't see him coming back as a Giant. I really wish he did. You know, I'm, like Paul said earlier, prepared for life without him. Because he's going to look at, I think it's fair to say he's going to look at Ovi's contract and use that as a barometer to what he could get.
And you know what, Richie? I wouldn't blame him if he did that. I think any agent and any premier player would also look at what other players are getting at similar rates and similar positions.
I don't think you can blame him for that. They were virtually equally effective this season. But the caveat's going to be more injury history for JPP and the fact that he did miss the final month of the season. That's
and he's known for not, you know, making a full season. You know, throughout the time with the Giants, I think maybe he's only played a one full season.
Well, no, he's actually played more than that. He's had four seasons in which he's played all 16 games. He did that in his first five seasons. Last two seasons, 8 games in 15, and then now 12 this past season. But eight obviously was as a result of the hand injury.
That's an off-the-field injury.
Correct.
That's
it was not
same.
Football-related, not but still, it did contribute to him not playing a full season.
I just, like, you know, like I said, don't get me wrong. JPP is, you know, monster guy, crazy pass rusher. You know, he's just an amazing player. But seeing all, you know, we can't hand out big contracts to all these players because we have so many upcoming ones. Like, you know, let's say – I really hope he does. I hope Odell Beckham really does get better this coming season. You know, if we make playoffs, you know, I really want to see him best. But if he does that, he's going to have a record-setting contract that nobody has ever seen before. I think if he does get better, if Odell Beckham continues to, you know, step his game up, and when the time is gone, because he hasn't, you know, knock on wood, he hasn't been injured only since his rookie season was 4 games, and that was it. So durability is not a problem with him. But players like that, you have to, you know, plan ahead for Richburg, Pugh, and to give give Pierre Paul a similar contract to maybe what OV is getting. I'm sorry, it's just, it doesn't work out.
The only thing I will say to you, and it's a kind of on the flip side of what you're saying, if Eli's only got 2 or 3 years left, at some point his number is going to come off the books. At some point, Eli Manning will not be the Giants' quarterback anymore, and they're going to have to start from scratch, and you won't have that franchise quarterback number tying up so much of your dollars.
You just don't know when that's going to happen.
No, you don't.
That's
but,
the curveball.
But at some point, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. But at least for, you know, the foreseeable, let's say, I think he's on the contract maybe the next three or four seasons.
Well, we'll have to see how that all works out. And again, he could always redo his numbers, too.
Yeah, you know, always people can, you know, restructure a contract.
Yeah.
But it's just too much. You know, it really is. One quick thing on that subject. Have we seen enough from Okwara and Odighizuwa and players like that you would be comfortable seeing JPP leave?
One of the things we talked about throughout the show. I mean, I think you've seen flashes here or there, but I think it's still a very small sample size. I mean, Okwara looked great in that Dallas Cowboys game, but, you know, outside of that, because of the lack of opportunities, I don't know if you could say, well, he could duplicate what he did against Dallas. And Double O was limited because of injuries in his rookie campaign. And, you know, he's obviously had his fair share of ups and downs.
When we have seen Double O play in games, I don't see him as like a standout. You know, I haven't seen him.
I know.
The games that he has played, because he has played full games. You know, he's not always constantly hurt.
I would like to have seen more flashes out of him when he did play this past season. But I will say this. I'm not giving up on him yet, okay, based on he's only played 2 years and, in fact, only kind of played most of one because he lost the first year to injury.
He's a redshirt.
I'm not going to give up on him yet. I'm still going to hold out some hope and optimism, and I'm certainly going to hold out a lot of hope and optimism for Okwara. Where is his ceiling? I don't know, but I'm going to be hopeful.
Now, kind of with Jonathan Hankins.
Last thought, because we got to run.
Were you guys – did you guys see enough out of Bromley this past year? Just saying, like, you know, if we were to let Hankins go, and really the only DTs left would be Rob.
I don't think you've seen enough production there to feel very comfortable.
All right, Richie.
Okay, so in that aspect, and if you had to, you know, let's say JPP walked in,
I'd feel more comfortable, honestly, keeping Hankins because he's 25 and I, like, you know,
understood.
There's a big drop off.
And you also just brought in Game and Snacks Harrison, too, and appreciate the phone call, Richie, and you want to continue to build upon that chemistry. I mean, that's something that you don't want to break apart. So it's all things that have to be taken into consideration moving forward. With that being said, certainly appreciate everybody for chiming in on the conversation. Appreciate all the callers. We'll try to answer some of your tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday here on Giants.com. And by the way, a little nugget on Giants.com. Mike Mayock has put out his top performers from the Senior Bowl, so you can check out that article up on our team website. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.